A default looks likely in Greece.
And there are 12 days left to avoid one here in the U.S.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. It is the Marketplace Midday Update, our podcast from Marketplace.org. Today is Thursday, July 21st.
The forecast for today, a lot of AC draining on utilities.
The European debt crisis isn't exactly breaking news, but today could be a critical moment. We'll have the latest.
And serious bling on the high seas, billion-dollar bling. We're going to tell you about it a little later on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
Observers are calling it a critical make-or-break meeting in Brussels today. European leaders are poised to sign off on a second bailout for Greece to try and stop the spread of the European debt crisis. But as Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports, the package being worked out is likely to send Greece into what's called a selective default.
This would take the pressure off the Greek government and may keep investors happy. Holders of Greek government bonds, whose market value has been more than cut in half, would get their money back, but not for 30 years. The interest rate paid on these new bonds would be lower than current market rates. That's why it's called a selective default. Investors take a bit of a hit, but don't lose the bulk of their money. Stephen Lewis of Monument Securities says the European Central Bank may now be prepared to lend further funds to Greece on this basis.
It's beginning to look as though the ECB is willing to show some flexibility over this after having taken up a very rigid position earlier.
But big questions remain. What investors will make of this plan and whether it will end the 18-month-long Eurozone debt crisis. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Well, now to the debt ceiling fight in Washington. We are 12 days away from a possible default here in the U.S. if Congress and the president can't reach a deal to raise the debt ceiling. The focus now seems to be shifting towards some kind of short-term extension of the deadline so that lawmakers have more time to come up with some grand budget-cutting plan. Diane Swonk is chief economist with Mesirow Financial. She is with us from Chicago, as she is every Thursday. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, Diane, let's start with this idea that they're talking about in Greece, a temporary default. Is that something that could work here in the U.S. if there's no deal to raise the debt ceiling?
Absolutely not. I mean, the issue in Greece is that everyone knew eventually someone would have to take a haircut and they would have to default because they didn't have the means to service their debt or their commitments. We're not in that position. If we were to do it, it would be because we decided to do it and to penalize our investors, and that would have a very negative reaction.
Okay, well, let's talk about what would likely happen here in the United States. What do you think? It seems to be could really go any direction.
Well, it looks like we're going to get a temporary deal, a deal that's going to say, listen, we'll raise the debt ceiling today, and we're going to commit to getting a very strong commitment with a lot of Plan B in it to make sure that lawmakers follow it, to get over $4 trillion in cuts through the bipartisan Gang of Six Commission that has been working on this for some time. There's not a lot of details. The dirt and the details will be hammered out in committees within Congress, but also have a backup plan that if they don't get the numbers in, 10 senators will take their place. And I think that's what the rating agencies need to actually feel comfortable that we're moving in the right direction.
Well, it sounds like it makes sense, but it also looks like this kind of stuff could really go off the rails in Washington, that the Speaker of the House and the President don't have total control over what their parties are going to do.
That's the real problem, is that, you know, Congress has always sort of handled this as at a last-minute kind of ordeal. And the problem is that worked when it was child's play, when this was games that were just political games being played out in Washington. This is the real economy now. They need to be grown-ups, and they need to step up the plate and get it done. So we absolutely cannot risk it not getting done, although that is still a risk today.
Diane Swonk, chief economist with Mesirow Financial, thanks as always.
Thank you.
Well, when we talk about heat on Marketplace, we're usually reporting on hot debate going on, like debt ceiling talks, Jeremy, that are still unresolved,
yep,
as we keep hearing about, or a company whose earnings are a little warmer than expected, like AT&T, which just reported a 2.2% quarterly revenue increase.
But we don't have to go to AT&T for heat today, because hot weather actually is part of the business news today.
Mm-hmm.
A triple-digit heat has been baking the eastern and midwestern parts of our country for days, which means demand for electricity is hot. From steamy Washington, Marketplace's John Dimsdale has the story.
Air conditioners in many parts of the country are working all day and all night.
This morning when I looked at the thermometer outside my house, it was 78 degrees at 6 o'clock.
Ray Dotter lives outside Philadelphia. He also happens to work for the country's largest electricity transmission grid, PJM Interconnection. PJM covers all the territory between Newark, New Jersey, and Richmond, Virginia, and that's where temperatures today and tomorrow will be 100 or more degrees. Dotter expects today's electricity demand will be close to an all-time record, and yet he says it could have been worse.
If the economy had recovered more than it has, you'd see even higher uses of electricity.
If factories were running more, he says, they'd be taxing the power system. While Dotter says his grid is ready for the demand, the power will be expensive. When demand peaks, suppliers rely on all available generators, including older, inefficient plants and those that use more costly fuels like natural gas. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
More people applied for first-time jobless benefits last week, according to the Labor Department. And we got word today of a $29 billion deal that'll combine Express Scripts and Medco Health. Both firms manage health insurance prescription benefits.
The numbers, by the way, are at our website, marketplace.org. You can also follow us on Twitter. The program is at Marketplace Radio.
And my Twitter address is at Radio Chio.
And I am at Jeremy Hobson. And Steve, I am not on Google Plus, and I don't plan to be anytime
soon.
Unless
you get an invitation, never know.
That's true. But I don't need another social network at this point.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
Today is opening day for the new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Here now with the latest from his Economy 4.0 series on how the new economy can better serve more people. Marketplace correspondent David Brancaccio reports on the institutions that have the ability to help or hurt the new agency.
The Smithsonian, the Vietnam Memorial. That's your standard walking tour of D.C., but this is Marketplace, so let's do a quick lesson in financial power by doing an alternative tour. Corner of 17th and G Streets. Let's direct our attention here, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, or CFPB. As of today, it's the new regulator to defend consumers from abusive credit cards, deceptive mortgages, and the like. The CFPB's money comes from just a few blocks away. Constitution Avenue at 20th Street, one of the fountains in front of the United States Federal Reserve. The Fed pays the new bureau's bills, so Congress has less oversight, which is essential, says Travis Plunkett of the Consumer Federation of America.
Insulating the Consumer Bureau from the power of the financial services lobby so that they can make the right decisions for consumers without facing a backlash from their friends in Congress. That's what this is all about.
But that insulation is exactly what its critics are worried about. Todd Zawicki is a law professor at George Mason University.
The CFPB is going to be incredibly independent, and I think that's precisely the problem.
Not enough checks and balances, he argues, to keep the new CFPB from crippling the financial services industry. 44 U.S. senators are vowing to hold up confirmation of a new director of the bureau until it's put on a tighter leash. But if opponents want some kryptonite to check the CFPB's superpowers, they'll find some near 15th and Pennsylvania Avenue. What have you guys been looking at?
Everything. We're on our way to the White House right now.
Financial Stability Oversight Council is not on your list?
No, I can't say that it is.
The new council, made up of top financial regulators like the Treasury Secretary, has the power to quash new consumer financial protection rules if they see fit. In Washington, I'm David Brancaccio for Marketplace.
Now to the Marketplace global perspective. In Russia, vodka is famously the country's national drink, right? We've all heard about that. Nothing else really measures up in Russia to vodka. Certainly not beer, which until today hasn't even been classified as alcohol there.
But now, with new regulations, international brewers, including ones in the U.S., are expecting to take a hit. From Moscow, here's reporter Peter Van Dyke.
Since the end of the Soviet Union, Russians have got a real taste for beer, and international brewers have poured in to take advantage. Rocketing sales have been helped by laws that allowed anyone to sell beer at any time. Now the new law says beer is alcohol, and with that comes all sorts of restrictions. Natalia Zagvozdina of Renaissance Capital in Moscow says the end of sales at street corner kiosks will hurt brewers.
There are a big channel representing between 10 or 12% of the beer consumption.
Zagvozdina says along with the alcohol label comes a total ban on TV advertising. That will also be a problem, although brewers and industry groups say they have time to adjust. The law doesn't come into effect until long after presidential elections next March. In Moscow, I'm Peter Van Dyke for Marketplace.
Moving on to China now. That country is notorious for all its counterfeit products like handbags or clothes, even electronic gadgets. But now some Chinese forgers are moving from faking products to faking entire stores. From Hong Kong, here's the BBC's Andrew Wood.
Officially, there are only four Apple stores in mainland China, two in Beijing and two in Shanghai. So residents in southern China were surprised this week to find an Apple store open up in the city of Yunming. The computers look real enough. The shop, one American blogger living in Yunming wrote, had a classic Apple store winding staircase, and the employees all wore the blue Apple store uniform shirts. But the paint job wasn't up to the standard she expected from Apple, and the sign outside said Apple Store in English. Authentic Apple stores apparently just have the Apple logo. Matt Iglesias is a liberal reporter at the Center for American Progress. He was recently in China, and he came across another fake Apple store in a different city, Yiwu.
Well, I would say the biggest clue actually was the packaging of the products, which was all written in English, you know, as if it wasn't actually designed to be sold in the Chinese market.
Counterfeit products are common in China, but increasingly discerning Chinese customers want to buy authentic items, so they prefer to shop at flagship stores owned by the Western companies that make the goods. Incredibly, reports are that the employees of the fake store even thought they actually worked for Apple. In Hong Kong, I'm the BBC's Andrew Wood for Marketplace.
Now to a job advertisement in the UK that asked for applicants who wanted to be a nail technician. Previous nail experience was preferable but not essential. But the company that placed the ad knew something was wrong, Steve, when several beauticians applied for the job because they didn't mean those kinds of nails.
They wanted to give manicures, right?
That's what the people thought was going on, but the job was actually with a construction company.
There could be a deal as early as today between NFL owners and football players who have been locked out of team offices for months now because of a big labor dispute. Well, the season isn't scheduled to start until the fall, but it's already costing Las Vegas sports betting millions of dollars. Chad Millman is editor-in-chief of ESPN, the magazine, and he's with us now from Bristol, Connecticut. Hi, Chad.
How are you?
I'm doing well. We're still weeks away from the start of the NFL season, though. Why are we talking about lost money in Las Vegas?
Because what happens in Las Vegas is when the schedule is made in April, that's when bookmakers put up the week one lines. People can start betting those immediately. And what's happened is because of the lockout, they haven't been able to put up the week one lines because they didn't know if there was going to be a season. And there's just been a lot less action because people don't want to tie their money up or make investments on a team if there isn't going to be a season.
What kind of lost money are we talking about, you know, roundabout figure in Vegas?
The smaller books probably lost $1 million total. Plus, you're talking about the trickle down that happens when people come in to bet on their favorite team. They also might make a bet on a Major League Baseball game that is happening that night or an NHL playoff game. Think about some of the bigger books, you can double that. So if you multiply that by all the sports books that are in Las Vegas, then you're talking about $10 million total.
Do you think odds and bets will be any different because of this lockout?
Long-term, absolutely not. But I think initially there are these bets called the over-unders and the totals. What happens is you bet on the total number of points that will be scored in a game.
Right.
Teams might not be up to speed because they haven't had the past 4 or 5 months to really work together and build a chemistry. So the totals will be much lower than they normally are. And I think a lot of people are going to try to take advantage of the fact that you'll see numbers that are much lower than they normally have been to start a season.
Do bookies already have their odds ready? I mean, how soon after this lockout ends, presuming
it ends?
They'll
be ready to go.
They're like immediately.
Instantly. I mean, some guys just have to push a button. Some places might be more judicious with their studies and might wait to see where some of the bigger name trades that have been talked about, how those play out before they put up their season win totals. And then certainly week one lines, those will be ready to go instantly.
Chad Millman, editor-in-chief of ESPN the magazine. Chad, thanks.
Thank you.
Today, Iowa Democratic Senator Tom Harkin will host a roundtable discussion on for-profit colleges. The senator says he's looking for suggestions on how to improve success rates and reduce the high rate of defaults on federal student loans that are used at those for-profit colleges. From the education desk at WYPR in Baltimore, Marketplace's Amy Scott reports.
Harkin says for-profit colleges get $30 billion a year from federal student aid, but too many of their students wind up with debts they can't pay and dim job prospects. Harkin says he's hoping for some good suggestions
on how we move forward to make sure that the taxpayers' dollars are better invested and to make sure that students get a good education.
Harkin's Republican colleagues have boycotted the hearings, calling them biased. Today's panel includes the CEO of DeVry, one of the biggest for-profit college chains. But Brian Moran, with the Association of Private Sector Colleges and Universities, says most of the panelists are critics of the industry.
You may describe it as a round table, but it's one with sharp corners.
Yesterday, Moran's group sued to block a new federal rule aimed at making sure graduates earn enough to pay their debts. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Well, now to something completely different, Steve. In its first 3 weeks at the box office, Transformers. Did you see Transformers?
I have not seen it yet.
Okay,
no.
Well, it raked in more than $300 million.
Wow.
And now, as Marketplace's Eve Troe reports, the producers of Transformers have a new project involving the blue-skinned, green-haired superhero, Captain Planet.
By your powers combined, I am Captain Planet!
Captain Planet, he's a hero, gonna take pollution down to zero.
Oh, sorry, can't help it. And consumer psychologist Kit Yarrow isn't surprised. Captain Planet fought villains like Loot and Plunder and Hoggish Greedley in the early 90s. His comeback's right on time.
We tend to go back about 20 years when it comes to our infatuation with nostalgia.
Ted Turner's cartoon broke ground as the first environmental kids show. But Yarrow says the captain and his multicultural planeteers need a makeover.
No offense, I know you love him, but it's cheesier than a lot of the other action heroes.
Still, he's a known entity, a plus for the partners in the remake, Cartoon Network and Angry Films. Kea Chatterjee leads climate change negotiations for the World Wildlife Fund. She says Captain Planet will help environmental issues stay in the spotlight. Plus,
I could really use a hero right now.
Well, Kea, remember,
the power is yours!
I'm Eve Troe for Marketplace.
And finally, a British jewelry designer, Jeremy, says he has created the world's most expensive yacht.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'm ready to go for a trip on this puppy. Stuart Hughes claims the 98-foot boat is worth $4.5 billion.
Wow.
That is billion with a B.
That is an expensive boat.
That is one expensive boat, my man. The yacht's exterior and the dining room and rails and anchor and sleeping quarters, they're all made of thousands of pounds of gold and platinum, like solid gold, like
wow.
The whole outside of the boat is gold. There's even a liquor bottle made from a rare...
That seems slightly excessive.
Yeah. There's even a liquor bottle that's made from a rare 18.5-carat diamond. A liquor bottle. But some yachting enthusiasts, and I got a big laugh out of this earlier when I was looking at this story, say the boat is way overpriced because it is missing something that the previous most expensive yacht had,
yeah,
which is a missile defense system.
Just in case.
The previous boat was the most expensive yacht was like, I think somewhere like $500 million.
The USS Constitution.
I don't know what it was. It was $450 million, I think is what it was. It had its own missile defense system for $4.5 billion. You'd think, Jeremy, they would put a missile defense system on there.
You'd
but
think.
No.
That's $4.6 billion if you want the missile defense.
That's right. That's right. It's a luxury package. You can check out pictures, by the way, of the boat of bling at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's a speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.